89.3 4CRB.
And a very good morning to you, John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You on a rather wet Tuesday morning. This is your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock daylight saving. All you need to do is get on that telephone as soon as you possibly can. 55208888 is our number. That number again, 55208888. Don't forget, if you're south of the Tweed River, you need to put 07 in front of the number. Otherwise, throughout Tweed Heads and all of Queensland for that matter, 55208888. And we have someone who's very quick out of the box this morning, as we say a very good morning to Judy. G'day, Judy, how are you?
Hello, John. Yes. My question is, I have two kids. One's been really good, the other one cannot wait to get their hands on my money.
Right.
And what is the name of the document that I write explaining why I'm not leaving so much to that person?
Well, you would do what's commonly called a statement of testamentary wishes, which is done...
What is it, a statement?
Statement of testamentary wishes, which
yes.
basically you is separate to your will and
yes.
stays with your executor and only sees the
right.
light of day if someone contests your will. So it's normally
right.
only prepared in situations where you think there is some likelihood that someone may contest your will. And, for example, in this case, if you're going to leave more to one of your children than to the other, then... It would be advisable to have a document that explains why you've done that. That will not guarantee that your other child will not bring an application for greater provision out of your estate. But that document would then be produced at that time, and it's as close as you can get to actually giving evidence to the court as to what were the thoughts going through your mind at the time that you made the decision you made, and why you've provided less for one child than for another.
Right. Can I do that myself, and do I need to get it signed by a JP?
Well, you would certainly, you may be able to do it on your own. You need to make sure that you cover off all of the things that you need to cover. For example, you would need to say why you're making less a provision that, you know, for example, if you've given one child money during their lifetime and they've just wasted it, or if they're a spendthrift or whatever. There, and one of the other things too that's quite important in that situation is, for example, if you have little, if any, contact with that child. So if that child
yeah.
never bothers to send you Christmas cards
yeah.
or birthday cards, and
you
know, the only
correct.
Time they ever
yeah.
call you is when they need money, all of those
exactly
facts
right.
are relevant.
Yes.
The other thing you need to look at too is also the financial position of both of your children and the need that they may have. But there is what is called disentitling conduct, which is what I've described there. And I mean, for example, if that child said to you, "Mum, can you hurry up and die so I can get your money?" That would be
correct.
A pretty callous thing to say, and that would certainly be the sort of thing to record. But you need to make sure that what you put down in that statement of wishes is factually correct
yes.
and is put down in an unemotional way, so that it... It basically represents evidence.
Do I need to get it signed by a JP after that?
I would certainly recommend that you do it in the form of a statutory declaration, and that you do have it witnessed by a Commissioner for Oaths or a JP. And if you want to put it, if you want to make sure that it covers as much as it can and does it correctly, then my advice would be to have it done by a solicitor. The other thing that you need to bear in mind, though, Judy, is it's no guarantee that that other child will not contest your will.
But if she doesn't have the money to do it...
Well, she may think she'll get it out of the estate. But if you've set it up properly and the statement of wishes is quite strong and your circumstances are such as to justify what you've done, then the courts are becoming increasingly reluctant to order costs paid out of the estate, and she would run the real risk of facing an order for costs herself against the estate if she brought an application. So hopefully that
right.
will do the trick. All right,
okay.
then.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, John.
Okay,
thanks,
Judy.
That.
All the very
Bye.
Best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 13.5 minutes to 10, 13.5 minutes to 11, south of the Tweed, or south of the border, and we say a very good morning to John. G'day, John. How are you?
Good. Look, it's a very similar thing that I've got.
Yes, John.
My mother died last year,
mm-hmm.
and my sister, there's four beneficiaries, me, my two brothers, and my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother made the sister the executor.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister's taken some sort of a poison attitude towards me, where
mm-hmm.
it tells me nothing.
Mm-hmm.
She's delaying it on purpose, I think, you know, selling mm-hmm. the house and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What am I right? Can I get a copy of the will?
And you're certainly, what am I right? You're certainly entitled to a copy of the will. When did your mother pass away?
In October. Last year.
October. Okay, well, the first thing, even though your mother has made a will which leaves the estate to you and your siblings, so she's left the estate equally to all the children, is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay, so even though she's done that, did she die in Queensland or New South Wales?
New South Wales.
Right, okay. So there is a process that the executor needs to go through. In New South Wales, for example, if there's a house involved, then your sister needs to get probate of the will before...
That's already been done.
...before she can sell the property. The property then needs to be transmitted into her name and then sold. In Queensland, for example, no executor would distribute the estate before the expiration of 6 months from date of death. But you certainly are entitled to be informed. Do you know whether your sister has engaged a solicitor to deal with the administration?
The
I would assume she would, because if she's taken out probate.
Yeah, the will was with a solicitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure that solicitor's handling it on her behalf in a lot of ways.
Right, okay. Well, you're certainly entitled to a copy of the will. That's the first thing, John.
Who do I ask?
Well, you would write, I would suggest you write to the solicitors, and they will then seek instructions off your sister, but they will know and they will advise her that she has an obligation to provide a copy of the will to you. And you're also entitled to know what the estate consists of. But if probate is, I would actually be asking them for a copy of the probated will, to be honest, because the probated will have the inventory attached to it, which in New South Wales you've got to attach an inventory of what the estate consists of.
Right,
so ask for a copy of the probate. Mm.
The
Sorry?
House has already been emptied out by her and one of the other beneficiaries.
Right.
So there's nothing left in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got no idea what was in there. I suspect there's some pretty expensive jewellery at least.
Mm.
And I suspect there's a fair bit of money in the bank.
Well, you need to have a look at, you need to know what, well, they won't be able to touch the money in the bank without probate, and she will be obliged to give an account of the administration of the estate. So, as I say, write to the solicitors and ask for a copy of the probated will, which hopefully will have a copy of the inventory of what the estate consists of.
Okay.
And from that, it may be, for example, that the will says, I leave all my jewellery to my daughters. You just need to know what it says. Mm. All right, then.
It's nice for me to know.
Okay.
You know, like, totally hostile with me and not...
Yeah. All right, well, write to the solicitors and hopefully that'll answer some of your queries. John?
Thank you very much for that.
All the best. And the time is just past 20 minutes to 10, 20 minutes to 11, daylight saving, and we say a very good morning to Len. G'day, Len. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Well, indeed. Thanks. How can we help you?
Okay, just a small thing.
Hmm.
I parked my car in the main street the other day,
mm-hmm.
and where the drain comes out of the gutter, there's like a pipe, square pipe comes out, but it's flush with the concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pushed out and all twisted. And when I backed my car in, it ripped a big hole in my tyre.
Mm.
And I had to replace the tyre.
Mm-hmm.
Who would I sort of see about paying for the tyre? Because that shouldn't be right.
Well, Len, it's one of those situations that is going to be a little difficult for you, I'm sorry. You'll need to, you can certainly make an approach to the council, but I think you'll find that what the council will say is that they weren't aware that damage had occurred, and the only way you've got any likelihood of getting any recompense from them would be if you can prove that it was like that for some time, the council had been notified and had done nothing to fix it. So if the damage was only relatively recent, it's the same as these days in shopping centres. If, you know, if you're in a supermarket and you slip on a lettuce leaf on the floor, these days it doesn't automatically mean that you're entitled to damages because you've slipped over. If the shopping centre or the supermarket can show that they've got a process in place whereby they have someone look through and check and make sure everything's clear, say every half hour or hour, and they sign off to confirm that they've checked for things on the ground. And it's a little bit like that with the council. For example, with potholes, if you hit a pothole in the road after rain, normally you will not have a claim. Because the council can't reasonably be expected, A, to know the hole was there, or B, to have got round and fixed it within, you know, a few hours of the rain ceasing. So it's going to be a bit of a tricky one for you, Len. What I would suggest is that you could... whereabouts did this actually happen? Is it on the Gold Coast?
No. It happened at Pottsville outside the chemist shop in Coronation.
Oh, right. Okay. So you're down in New South Wales. So Tweed Shire Council. Yes.
Yep.
Certainly some of the roads down there leave a lot to be desired. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Look, the only thing...
It's a drain.
I understand what you're saying. What I would suggest you do is see if you can find out from... do you live in that area? Do you live down around there?
Yeah, I only live 5 minutes up the road.
Okay. Well, why don't you just go and check with some of the shops nearby and see if you can find out how long it's been like that for and whether anyone's reported it to the council, and that might give you a better shot. But outside of that, don't hold your breath. It may not be good for your health.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, Len, all the best with that.
Thanks for your advice.
No worries.
Bye.
Cheers now. And the time just rolls along, and we're coming up to 12 and a half minutes to 10, 12 and a half minutes to 11, daylight saving. We say a very good morning to Lois. G'day, Lois. How are you?
Hello.
Yes, Lois, how are you?
I just wondered if you could explain to me. I was involved in a court case last week.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fraud charge, and he'd been locked up for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
what, he'd been in jail for 2.5 years pending trial?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And 18 months ago, he had his preliminary hearing, and then it was heard 6 months ago, and it was just a schmozzle, and it was reset for last Monday.
Mm-hmm.
I and my son were first witnesses up, went for 3 days, then we heard he pleaded guilty to 2 charges, and they dropped the other 10 or so, and he got bail, where he'd applied for bail the previous times and didn't get it because he had broken parole for the same fraud, and he'd been given a 6-year suspended sentence. And so we understood, this is what our understanding, that he had to now serve the 6 years. But now he's out on parole.
Bail suggests that there are charges that still haven't been heard.
Yeah, well, he pleaded guilty to 2 of them. But when they dropped the other 10, does that mean it's like they didn't exist?
Well, if they drop the charges, what that basically means is that they're not going to prosecute him for whatever those charges were, which means that he effectively will not be required to defend himself in relation to those charges, and that's basically the end of the matter. So what I think you really need to do, Lois, is to try and contact the prosecution section of the police. Dealt with by the Department of Public Prosecutions, or was it being dealt with by the police prosecutor, the DPP?
It was the DPP.
What I would suggest you do...
It doesn't affect me, but all the other people that he defrauded, like 100,000 or more out of, they're just left, I'd say, gobsmacked.
What I would suggest you do is get them to get onto their local member of parliament, and to just to look at whether applying pressure to the parliamentarians and the Attorney General to say, you know, this shouldn't have happened, and for the Attorney General to review the case and see whether, in fact, they can still proceed on the other charges or whether they have, in fact, been dismissed.
Yes.
And secondly, whether the current arrangements in relation to his bail need to be reviewed, given that he's presently serving a suspended sentence for previous charges. It sounds to me, doesn't sound to me right that he should be out on bail,
if he was
already convicted and had a 6-year suspended sentence when these other charges came. So I would be speaking to the Department of Public Prosecutions and also get the people who
they don't see the matters as like individual. He said if it's $1 million, it's taken seriously because it was only like $100,000 one lady and mortgage on a house and other. At things, it's not amounting to that much, and
$100,000 to someone can be $1 million.
I mean, she's in her 60s.
Yeah,
and
so that's just absolutely devastating.
It's devastating.
I suppose the difficulty is that even if the fellow goes to jail, there's probably no likelihood that he's going to get her any money back. But I would suggest that she contact her local member of parliament. And hopefully they will be able to assist her in approaching the Attorney General to find out why this has occurred.
Yeah, okay then.
All right, then, Lois.
It's more for someone else rather than me.
I understand that, but obviously you're trying to help the person concerned, and I appreciate that. That would be the best course of action that I could suggest to you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Lois, all the very best. Time continues to march along, just past 12 minutes to 10. That's 12 minutes to 11 daylight saving time. We're getting close to that last 10 minutes of the program, so if you have a question or a query, please don't wait. Get on that telephone straight away. 5520888 is the number. And we say a very good morning to Graham. G'day, Graham. How are you?
Hello. Yes, John. I'm well, thank you.
How can we help?
A simple question.
Sure.
With my will, I have 2 sons. One I would prefer to give nothing to.
Mm-hmm.
If we got an estate, let's say it's worth $500,000, if I left one of the sons $50,000 on the proviso he does not contest the will, would that hold water or not?
No.
No.
No, that's an urban myth.
So
he would be able to bring an application to say that adequate provision has not been made for him. That doesn't automatically mean he'll get anything. And, Graham, quite honestly, what I would be suggesting you do is go and consult a solicitor who's experienced in this area of estate planning to what is the best thing you can possibly do to achieve your wishes as far as your will is concerned. There are a number of strategies that can be put in place, but the one thing you need to be aware of is that no one can give you a 100% guarantee that your will not be contested.
No, well, the other question is, I've got a company, a proprietary limited company. Mm. If I bought the son that I wish to give the assets to into that company, and then when I pass away, he takes over the company, could the other son still contest that?
Well, if you, for example, are looking at transferring the shares, if your assets are the shares in the company and that company's got assets and you transfer the shares to your son, the son you wish to inherit before you die, then that may be a strategy that will help, unless you live in New South Wales, because in New South Wales, of course, you've got the notional estate provisions where they can undo transactions in the last 3 years that were entered into for the purposes of overcoming. But I still come back to what I said to you before, Ivan. Given the circumstances, I would definitely be seeking competent legal advice.
Thank you, John.
Okay,
thanks,
Graham.
For your help.
All
okay.
the very best.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
And time just continues to march along as we say a very good morning to Ivan. G'day, Ivan. How are you?
Oh, hi. Is that John?
It is indeed.
Oh, hi, John. Okay, I bought a business 12 months ago, and the sale contract, the seller had to work for me 2 days a week for 12 months, and that the seller could not start a business, the same business, for 2 years within a 30-kilometre radius.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The 12 months, 2 days a week period is up. That's ended. But for the last few months, clients have been telling me that the seller's been doing the same business from their home and has even printed business cards. So mm-hmm. what can I do to stop this person competing with me on their home?
Well, you can certainly take action against them for a mandatory injunction to restrain them from doing that, and you could also bring a claim for damages in relation to the damage that they're causing to your business as a result. Sadly, it's not an uncommon thing to happen, Ivan. The one issue will be the reasonableness or otherwise of the restraint. And what did you say the restraint is? 2 years and 30 kilometres?
Yeah, 2,000.
Okay, yes, so look, it depends on the type of business, etc. So there's a number of issues involved. But look, on the face of it, I would suggest that you've probably got a reasonable claim, and probably what you would do before you bring any application or anything would, I would honestly be getting a lawyer to write a letter to the other fellow and just tell him that if he doesn't immediately desist, that you're going to sue him.
Okay.
So because you don't want to get tied up in a court case if you can avoid it, it will just cost a fortune. So you're far better to just do that, but get a lawyer who has a bit of a reputation in terms of litigation, so that when they write, they know you're not mucking around, that you really will take action if they don't desist from what they're doing. All right,
okay,
then.
Does Bell Legal have a reputation for that?
Well, there certainly are a couple of very competent partners there who are litigation partners, so one of them would be certainly would be more than able to do that for you.
All right, I'll give them a call. Thanks very much.
Okay, John. Ivan, all the very best.
Thank you, bye.
And the time just continues to roll along, just coming up to 7 minutes to 10, 7 minutes to 11, daylight saving, and we say good morning to Kylie. Good morning, Kylie. How are you?
Hi.
How are you, Kylie?
Oh, good, good. I have an unusual situation where I've been to an auction for a property, and it's actually been sold at the auction. However, the documentation contract has a...
Were you the purchaser?
No, I'm actually the seller.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, and this is the reason why it's unusual, because the agent has put together the contract,
mm-hmm.
and where it is title encumbrances, he's only sort of specified refer to title search,
mm-hmm.
and it says on the side, do not use this. And we were very clear with the details of the property, and now we have a situation where the actual buyer is unhappy with mm-hmm. How, you know, with her findings. So,
was there a copy of the title search attached to the contract?
No, I don't know.
Because normally when it says refer to title, they attach, and just about all auctions that I've been involved with, you know, and I get involved in quite a few through my role in administering estates, and there will always be a copy of the title search attached to the contract so that the buyer can see any encumbrances that are that relate to the property. Yes, look, it's quite unfortunate.
It is unfortunate.
Hmm.
We're just sort of wondering our position, like where should we get legal advice now, which, you know, the contract could collapse.
Yes, well, look, I would certainly be getting legal advice in relation to the matter.
Okay.
And I would, depending on that advice, I would then be considering what rights you may have against the agent for because I've just got, look, I don't deal in the property area anymore. I haven't done any work in that field for probably 20 years, but I just have something in the back of my mind that refer to title in relation to encumbrances is not acceptable. That you, if there are encumbrances, you're required to outline them.
Yeah, even under auction condition?
Look, I'm just not 100% sure on that, Kylie.
Okay.
So that's why I would
all
suggest
right.
that you get some legal advice from someone who deals in that area.
Sure.
You don't have a solicitor acting for you in relation to the sale?
We do.
Right. Okay,
yeah,
so have you spoken to them in relation to it? All right, okay.
We have. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so look, if you're looking if you're wanting to get some free advice in relation to this, what part of the Gold Coast are you on?
The northern end.
The northern end, okay. So you could ring the Citizens Advice Bureau at Southport.
Okay.
On 553 29611.
Okay, 553-296-11.
Okay, so that's probably the best idea. They're located in Railway Street at Southport, but you might be lucky to be able to ring them up over the phone, have a chat to them.
Fantastic.
Or otherwise, if you ring the Queensland Law Society, they'd be able to refer you to someone who's competent in that field.
Okay, great.
All right, then.
All right.
Okay,
thank
Kylie,
you very
all the very best with that.
Have a lovely day.
You too.
Will
Cheers
do.
Now. Bye. And the time on 4CRB, 3:30 to 10, coming up to news quickly as we say good morning to Robert. G'day, Robert. How are you? Hello, Robert. Are you there? No, Robert. Maybe we're on the second Robert. Good morning, Robert. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, John. Just a quick question. Can
sure.
you tell me when your next Centre League segment's coming on your show, or do you not know yet? Your Centrelink program?
Oh, the Centrelink. Sorry, no, I don't do that. That's Finance Forum on a Thursday morning. So
it's on
same,
Thursday.
Thursday
oh,
morning
good.
At 9:30,
okay.
same
Thanks
time,
that.
Robert, and that's when you can pick them up.
Thank you very much.
Okay, then, all the very best.
Goodbye, thanks.
Bye now. Well, thank you to all the people who called in and made for such an interesting program this morning. Certainly many and varied calls, and that's always great because not only can we help the people who call in, but also many people who are listening might have similar issues. A couple of things that I wanted to just remind people about, and that is that the Banking Royal Commission, of course, is now underway. And if you're wanting to make a submission to the Banking Royal Commission, you can go to their website. It's financialservices.royalcommission.gov.au, or if you just do a Google search of Banking Royal Commission, that will bring up the site that you need to go to, and that will provide you all the information about how you can make submissions or how you can contact them if you've been affected. So if you fall into that category, then that website might be worth a little visit. The other thing too, the other day I had someone query me about what the difference is between blackmail and extortion. And so I just thought I'd give a quick explanation of that. Blackmail is actually where you threaten to reveal something about someone. So for example, if you said to someone, unless you give me $5,000, I'm going to tell your wife that you're having an affair with the next door neighbour, that is blackmail. And then the differentiation between that and extortion is that extortion is a threat which normally involves violence. So where you say to someone, for example, if you knew they were involved in illegal activity, you might say to them, unless you give me $10,000, I'm going to get both your legs broken. Something of that nature. That would basically be extortion. But the other thing that you just also need to bear in mind is that threatening to report a crime to the police, if someone fails to do something you want them to do, is actually a crime in itself. So don't go around threatening that you're going to report people to the police. Otherwise, you can end up in trouble yourself. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, it's been great to be with you this morning for The Law and You. I look forward to being back next week. But as always, until then, goodbye and God bless.